All right, we are live with our mini sessions. This is the DJ and TV mini sessions today. Thank you for joining us. This is John Young with the Disc Jockey News and Disc Jockey News TV. And today is going to be a day of educational tips, is the best way to describe this. We're starting here at 2 o'clock Eastern, going until 1 a.m. tonight. We've got 44 different presentations that'll be coming to you over the next 11 hours. This is crazy. This is going to be like a marathon day today. So again, thank you for joining us. If you're watching this, this is the first of 11 different videos that we'll be putting up on YouTube today. You can go to djntv.com/mini-sessions and at any time during the day and go to one of the other video players. If you're later in the day, the earlier ones will be up and processed and you can go and check out one from earlier, or you'll be able to go and click so you can catch the next one. I'm not going to be able to put links and such into the chat room like I typically do because it's kind of crazy today because we're running a lot of stuff and doing a lot of different things. So it's going to be a day of tips. We've got probably about 20 of the sessions that were pre-recorded, and there's a lot of these sessions that will be done live today. And you're going to be able to tell a little bit, of course, because we'll be having some glitches. Being this is a live show, it's never completely 100% predictable. So and thank you guys for, we've got some of you in the chat room already. Thanks for joining. TV's off. I hope the TVs are off because there's no football. I mean, it's Super Bowl's next week. That's what we chose this weekend. So yeah, for those of you who are regular watchers of DJ and TV, this of course is my studio area. And today you can actually see because there's lots of light because it's daytime. Typically when we're doing these things, it's night, dark, what have you. So it's a little bit of a different setup and such. If you go to the djntv.com/mini-sessions, one of the things with this event today, what we're doing is you'll go and you can read on the right, and there's a little write-up about what we do. One of the things we do is in the last few years, we have dedicated a part of our proceeds that we have gotten from our advertisers and different things, and we have given back to the DJ community. I think last year, I think it was around 3,200, somewhere in that ballpark, 1 year, and we've been as high as around 4,000. But we've been donating to help DJs in need. There have been times where someone needed to get a hotel room because they had an emergency procedure done and they just didn't have the money and they were desperate and like, John, what can we do to help? And it's like, you know what, I'll cover the cost of the room to help you out. And we've had different events and such where people, the DJs are in need, whether it's for this reason or that reason. You know, most of it's health related, you know, things that we can't predict. So if you go there and you're going to see on the right side where we're doing donations and such, and what we're basically doing is trying to build up that fund so when something happens in someone's life and they need, you know, a couple hundred dollars to get through a hard time in their life, that we have some funds available for them and such. I've been pulling it out of our proceeds and such from the last few years, and we can, you know, we're still going to do some of that, but times have gotten a little bit tighter as we have more staff and things. So it's like, you know what, there's a lot of DJs out there who'd like to help their fellow DJ, but sometimes they're a little suspect about, okay, is this person really someone who's going to be, we should be helping or what have you? Well, most of the time, the people that we've been helping are people that we have known of or have connections because of our wide network, and we know that the money is going to exactly where it should be going. So that's what that's all about when you go take a look at that on the right-hand side today. So yeah, we're going to get right into our first session tonight. We've got Big Daddy. If you haven't gotten a chance to meet Big Daddy, this is a must-do thing. You need to go out to DJ Expo in August and meet Sean McKee, Sean Big Daddy. Big Daddy is a great person and a very, very passionate and very motivational person, I think is the best way to describe it. So we're going to be bringing Big Daddy up here. He'll be doing the first session to kick us off today. You're watching the mini sessions here from DJ and TV. So Big Daddy, let's talk a little bit about not waiting for the party to come to us. What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, most every bride and groom, when you ask them as a salesperson, whatever you call it, their biggest answer is, we want everybody to party and dance. Well, that's a simple, easy thing to do. But one of the things that I've been doing for the past couple of years, I'm doing introductions, and on the East Coast, we do things a little different, and I'm trying to inspire everybody to try and do this, just to get the party started early everywhere. introductions into the room. Once the best man and maid of honor get into the room, everybody's up surrounding the dance floor. Make sure that they come in, the bride and groom come into a banger, something hard, Pitbull, whatever the case may be, something upbeat and ready along the lines of the theme that they're looking for. Then they get into the middle of the dance, place is going nuts. Everybody's going into the, they get to the middle of the dance floor. All right, friends and family, it's time to take 10 steps in. It's now time for the first official family dance of the day. Everybody's dancing. About three quarters of the way through that song, I will call the bride and groom up towards me.
Sure.
I will have the photographer and videographer stationed already, ready to go. Everybody gathered behind them. They kiss, point, everything else to do the big group shot. Everybody has been on the dance floor before the first dance. Then once you're done, you back everybody up, station them on the dance floor. Everybody's still surrounding the dance floor because 90% of the time, these folks don't want to do their first dance by themselves.
Yeah.
So it's called the first and forever dance after that. And then the place is so charged up. Sometimes we'll go into another small little dance set or just go back into blessings and toast. And another thing I'm doing, once first course is done, because we do course most of the time, two to three courses. Once appetizer or salad course has been served, everybody up. And when you're at a party, you're sitting with people that pretty much 90% of the people at your table, 95% of people at the table, are either a relative or somebody you've known for a long time. You're more apt to do things if you are with people you know, instead of just being called out like a herd. So I get everybody up, push your chairs into the table as far as they will go. High five the person to your left, high five the person to your right. Then you hold hands with that said person. Hold them up. The hands are up. They're going crazy. Now I want to hear three words. Tony and Amy have invited us here because you guys made the list. You're the final cut. So for the next 4 hours, we're going to show them just how much you love them. Three words. We love you. They go, we love you. When I start it, I say, my friends, keep those hands up. When I start this song, circle around your tables. Pick a nice banging song, whatever it is. They circle back and forth two or three times. My friends, unlink the chain. Still hold hands, but make your way to the dance floor. Everybody's on the dance floor. Caterers love you because everybody is on the dance floor. There's nobody sitting at the tables. How easy is it to clear? You know? So it's all about the client too, if they want that kind of stuff. You know, 90% of the people that I, you know, I'm going into percentages a lot, but most everybody that has hired me knows what I'm going to do.
Right.
And they really enjoy what that brings, because it brings family and friends together. And as I say, breaks the yellow tape, because two types of people come to weddings. The one that will take a taxi to avoid that dance floor at all costs to get to their table, or me. So, and then my closings are pretty much the same as my opener is. Second to the last song of the night is everybody in a big circle. The bride and groom, I'm playing like most of the time it's Friends in Low Places or Sweet Caroline or something. I used to do Sweet Caroline, but I do Sweet Caroline at the end now. High-fiving everybody in the bridal party and everybody that's left in the place. Mm-hmm. Then six steps in. Then six steps more in. One hand over the bride and groom. A final we love you. Going into like dirty bit or something like that where everybody's jumping. You start it. You finish. You start with a bang. You finish with a bang. Ladies and gentlemen, you have yourself a party.
Awesome.
And I don't just do this at weddings, though, either. Birthday parties, whatever the case may be, bar and bat mitzvahs. That's how I start my horah. Once we're done with candle lighting and they're going to do the horah, everybody's up, holding hands surrounding their tables. Because again, for those of you familiar with horrors, a lot of times people will just lay back. You just call people to the table. They hurt to the dance floor. No, you start from the table. Everybody's done the horror, whether they're Catholic, Jewish, or whatever.
And that energy that you're able to build by getting them involved early, it will carry through the night pretty much.
It really does, because your job is then, all you got to worry, I mean, you worry about a lot of things anyway, but your bride and groom are happier than pigs in mud. Mom and dad probably are signing the check. They're happy. And you're passing out cards right and left, because nobody's ever gotten us to do this before. There's people that will come up, you know, the pat on the back is wonderful. This, you know, that's wonderful. I love, you know, just spreading love is awesome. But people will do or tend to do things more if they're in a group situation than they are by themselves. People that don't dance will dance. People that don't get up will get up because they're in a forced situation. And it's guilt from here because every event you do is from here. It should be.
Yeah.
And you guilt them into that. Real good.
So do you have instances where...
I pulled that off on this... Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Do you have instances when you're having people, they don't want to get involved? How do you handle that?
It's funny. I've had a couple of weddings in the past couple of years where they get up. They all get up. They do the circles. They look at me like I'm out of my mind. Once I tell them to come to the dance floor, you'd have thought I asked them to part the Red Sea because they all look at me like, we're not going to the dance floor. Circles are fine, but we ain't going to the dance floor. But the bride and groom do, and like 10 or 15 other people do, they're good with that. And then you may get the rest of them with a slow song later on, but at least you got them up and moving for a few minutes.
Right.
And they've never, you know, listen, you take the good with the bad. Sometimes I don't do it, just knowing the people that the families, knowing them well enough. You know what? I really don't. But daytime weddings is the best time to do them. Night times, it's an instant party once the sun goes down anyway. But you want that party to start. Now, the one thing is with the intros, everybody's up because that's that time. But the circles around the tables, you pick and choose your battles with that one.
Right. Yeah, I can see that there's going to be some situations where that's going to work a little bit better, maybe just a hair bit later than right away.
Right, right. But then, you know, the second set coming in is a slow song for the older folks, everything else. Because, again, East Coast is totally different than anywhere else.
Yeah.
But as I try to tell people in this seminar, guys, give it a shot. Tell these folks, you know, don't do it Big Daddy way. Do it your way.
Yeah.
Make a couple of whatever adjustments you want. But let them know, guys. Do you want your party to start early? Or do you want to wait till after dinner to dance? Mm-hmm. A ton of them are going to say, we want to dance. You give them an exact amount of time. I tell them I need 12 minutes between when I start my table circles till the time they can start serving food. That's all you need? I said, that's all I need. And perfect. They love it. The caterer loves it because they're clearing the tables. But in the beginning, you want that party started banging. You want it to go nuts because then your job is easier. They've already been on the dance floor. They're not afraid to come to it anymore. But you got to do with everything you do, like anything you do, love story, this, that, whatever you're doing, do it with conviction like you've been doing it for years. You're going to know.
For sure. And once you're doing that and you're at that level, then people are going to be like, wow, this is so different. I've not seen a wedding like this. Let's stick around and see what's going to happen next.
Absolutely. The Kodak moments, the Fuji moments, whatever they are. And also another thing, and I get into this later on, I have the mom email me a song to dance with her son. I have the dad email me a song to dance with their son, with the dad with the daughter. They don't tell the son or daughter what they're dancing to. They don't know until they start dancing. You want to talk a wow moment that just like blows everybody. And it's a 2-minute operation,
mm-hmm.
Simple, easy. And the moms and dads are involved now. So everybody's happy. And, you know, getting the party started early or making wow moments are two pretty much the same thing for me, but you got to do it real. You got to do it real. You can't make, you know, the fake voice and everything. No, people are a lot smarter nowadays, and they know real from fake.
Great stuff, Big Daddy. Thank you much for sharing. So that was Sean, Big Daddy. I got to shut my cue off here so I don't listen to myself. Starting us off with basically getting that party going early, some ideas for that, which is kind of a cool thing. We're going to get right into our next segment here in just a second. Today's shows, you're seeing some of the sponsors in our lower third, but our big sponsor for this is Electro Voice speakers. So you're going to be seeing spots from Electro Voice throughout today. Great
quality gear. If you're looking for a sound system, I'd very much encourage you to check them out. We're going to get a spot, and we'll be right back here and get Dave Tournier going in just a moment. Our next presenter today is Dave Tournier from, he was from Winnipeg up in Canada, and now he has he's relocated and such. But Dave is going to be talking about a little bit about some uncomfortableness with his well, I'll let him tell you. We're doing the mini sessions here for DJN TV.
Hey everyone, it's Dave Tournier here, DJ here in Manitoba, Canada, and author of a little blog called adjthought.com. That's adjthought.com. And I publish a blog where I share what's working for me and why for DJs who are interested in maybe going to a little deeper level on things, a little higher level on things. And so I'm here today to share with you something that ties into what's going on around me right now. You're seeing me here in what's going to be my new office space right away. But of course, I'm not here to talk about office space, but the reason you see some movement behind me directly ties into what this video is about, but you're gonna have to hold off until we get to the end for that to be revealed. So what I wanna talk about today is something I wrote about on my blog recently, which was the whole idea of becoming uncomfortable. We surround ourselves with things that make us comfortable all the time. So, Dave, what are you talking about? Why would I want to get uncomfortable? Well, I'll share this with you. Back in 2011, I experienced an event that truly set the tone for what becoming uncomfortable felt like. A colleague of mine, Brian, and I had traveled to Minneapolis, Minnesota for a workshop that forced us into a place that we'd never really experienced before. I can't speak for Brian fully, but I can certainly speak for myself and say that it put us in this really, really uncomfortable spot. And in fact, so much so that we nearly left after day one. And I don't want to say we fully considered leaving, but the conversation was there like, God, I don't know if we can go back to day two. Like, we really felt amateur and just pathetic. And inside, we're just like, holy God, I don't know if I can face those people again. What the event was it was our very first Marbeca workshop, MC workshops with Mark and Rebecca Farrell, and it really set the tone for what can happen if you really put yourself, if you truly surrender yourself to becoming uncomfortable. We obviously stayed for that workshop, came out of it day two, fired right up, ready to take over the world. And this is not a hit against the workshops. I've since subjected myself, and I use that word lovingly, to seven of those workshops to this point. I've flown as far as California for them, and of course some of you watching this who are from overseas have flown a lot further than I have for them. They've been remarkable to my growth, and the uncomfort that I felt in them, I believe, is a direct correlation. I want to quickly share a Tim Ferriss quote that I included in my blog post about getting uncomfortable for this year, which is my theme for this year, which really speaks to this. And in fact, it was in one of his podcast episodes, and I actually had to stop the vehicle because I often listen when I'm driving, go back in the podcast, and I had to write this down. Tim said, "You only know what you're capable of if you push yourself close to the breaking point. You're going to have to endure incredible amounts of discomfort, period. That's it. Your success in life, by and large, can be measured by the number of uncomfortable conversations you're willing to have." I thought that was such a remarkable quote from Tim because as I look over the last few years of my life, it's getting myself into those really uncomfortable positions and having those uncomfortable conversations that have really pushed my growth to levels that in many cases I didn't expect would truly, truly happen. Pardon me. So what I want to encourage is for people to focus on the very idea of getting uncomfortable, and for a variety of reasons. I love speaking with DJs. I've spoken with many of you. And one of the things I find that often comes up is people refusing to get uncomfortable for some opportunity they might have. If there is a workshop or something like that that you want to go to and you don't have the resources, what is stopping you from getting some other part-time work or putting aside that speaker purchase for this thing? Having uncomfortable conversations for the sake of personal growth might involve, dare I say it, skipping a family vacation for the sake of a professional growth opportunity. Now, nobody wants to have that conversation, but in the big scheme of things, what is going to further advance the support that you can provide for your family? Are you missing out on opportunities because you're allocating all of your resources elsewhere? I don't want to say you should be skipping your family vacation. I'm using that as a bit of a metaphor for all the things that we do that we use to keep us comfortable, but how much are those things that we use to keep ourselves comfortable actually holding us back from our true potential? Since participating in the 22 push-up challenge last year, I realized very publicly, because of course you have to post those videos publicly, part of how it works, I realized very publicly that my body and my brain are not in sync. And I always knew I wasn't in the greatest of shape, but that really, really, really pushed the reality front and center for me. So I've been working on getting into some physical fitness this year. So I've decided, okay, well, what are the hurdles that stand in the way of that? Well, I hate getting up at early in the morning, which is when I have to get up a little bit earlier to do the physical fitness that I do. That's uncomfortable. I don't want to leave the house to go to a gym, so I'm going to do it in my house. So I attempted to remove as many barriers as I could between myself and this task. But then I decided, well, wait a second, why don't I just focus on getting uncomfortable? If getting uncomfortable is the goal, then physical fitness will simply be a byproduct of that. So my goal now is, you know what? When I'm in the middle of doing something, it's like, no, I want to be uncomfortable. I'm searching for this. I'm yearning for this. And the resulting byproduct is whatever the task at hand involves. There's all kinds of things that I think are holding many DJs back. Maybe you, maybe somebody you know. One example that really seems to hold a lot of people back is getting out and meeting your industry peers. Many DJs will say, oh, you know what, Dave, now the guys in my market, the girls in my market, they're yada, yada, yada. I'm like, stop. Be the uncomfortable one. Make that first push. Make that phone call. Get to know who they are. Yeah, it's not comfortable. You're going to make yourself be vulnerable. You're going to have to put yourself out there and say, hi, my name is Dave. I hear you're a DJ. We should go grab a drink one night. We should go for coffee. We should whatever. That's uncomfortable to do because they might say no. I get that. But if you can create some community in your area, much like myself and Brian and Dale and Ronnie and Brenton and all kinds of folks here in Manitoba have, incredible things will happen and have happened for us. Another example that you might want to put yourself out to do, and again, this goes to that getting uncomfortable, go and call up that photographer whose work you love to follow online and ask them out for lunch. What could possibly go wrong with that scenario? What's the worst case that could happen? They might say no. How's it going to make you feel? Going to make you feel like less of a person? It's going to make you feel like, who cares? Through creating relationships like that, you may find incredible potential for growth. I had coffee with a photographer friend last week. I'll be having breakfast with another photographer friend next week. I try to do things like that on a regular, continual basis. Now, I should share, maybe you're not that type of personality that can just do that. Well, you need to know that nobody watching this obviously knew who I was 10 years ago, 15 years ago. I can tell you that Dave Tournier of old is nothing like Dave Tournier of now. And he, this guy right here, has done a lot of growing in that area. So you may think you can't do that. I would argue differently that you just can't do that right now. If you work on it, you can do it. So call up that photographer, call up that banquet manager, schedule coffee, make yourself vulnerable to the very idea they might say no. They maybe don't want to meet with you, but when they do want to meet with you, incredible things may happen. I want to briefly touch on one part of being uncomfortable that kind of ties into another blog post I wrote recently, which was my journey from part-time to full-time. And this also ties into some stuff I was reading on Facebook just yesterday about an individual who's struggling to make full-time happen. And I guess what I want to share is this. I worked a part-time retail job until the very, very bitter end, until the very point where I was very sure things were going to work for me full-time. I think I was nearing that $2,000 per wedding mark, and I was booking almost every inquiry that came in before I left my part-time job. So if there is a struggle that's happening that is, you know, you've gone full-time now and you can't get to that conference or you can't get to that workshop and you know those things are going to do amazing things for the bottom line of your company, but you can't get to them because you don't have the resources to make it happen. And you're holding on to this pride that I'm doing this full-time. I'm doing this full-time. I'm not going to go work for someone else. I don't want to work for the man. I would argue, suck up the pride. Go and flip burgers. Go and pump gas for 10 hours a week, whatever it might be. And then you get yourself to those opportunities that might create incredible growth for yourself. They might lead you down that road. It was key for me. Yeah, it's a lot of work. And yeah, it might be really uncomfortable going backwards. But I don't want you to think of it as going backwards, because those who refuse to do that are the ones who will stall. You who will do that will be the person that will move forward. So I get that it's easy to stay comfortable, be comfortable. We surround ourselves with comfortable homes, comfortable furniture, comfortable this, comfortable that. But to what end is that stunting and slowing down our growth professionally, as a performer, as a business owner, and all of those other things? It's easy to stay safe. No one laughs at you. No one, you know, you're not forced to feel awkward. I get that. But at what expense does that come? I challenge you that you probably don't know. You probably have no idea at what expense that comes. Most people watching this video right now are going to ignore this push to become uncomfortable this year. And they're going to stay in that comfort zone, in that safe space they have. But for the 5% of you, maybe that's high, I don't know. For the 3% of you that might take the push to do things that make you really uncomfortable this year, you're going to love that most people don't do it, because you will reap the rewards of that. You're going to go out, meet that person, make that phone call, have that tough conversation at home that you don't want to do this, or you don't think your family should do this because you really want to get to XYZ this year, some workshop, whatever, because the long-term benefit to your family will be greater. Have those uncomfortable conversations, do those uncomfortable things, be vulnerable, put yourself in that place to experience growth that you can't currently predict, maybe. So, real quick, back to me. One of the things that makes me horribly uncomfortable, is standing on stage in front of anybody that's not wedding guests. My industry peers, my Joe Public at my Toastmasters group, whatever. And this counts right here. Doing this video, I have left this video up until the 11th hour to get it done for what you're watching today. It makes me ridiculously uncomfortable, which is why you see me walking around like this, because I just can't stay still. The nerves are here. This is driving me nuts to do. But the only way I'm going to get over it is by doing it. As Jamie Foxx said in an interview on the Tim Ferriss Show, which is a podcast you must listen to if you don't already, what's on the other side of fear? Nothing. So get uncomfortable with me this year, my friends. That's my theme for this year, getting uncomfortable, doing things that make me uncomfortable, putting myself into positions that I might otherwise shy away from. do that, come on this journey with me and let's see what we can make happen for ourselves. My name is Dave Tournier. I write a blog for mobile DJs with a solo operator focus at adjthought.com. That's adjthought.com. Thank you so much for watching. Get uncomfortable. Talk soon.
So that was Dave Tournier there, sharing a little bit of his thoughts on, there we go, there you're stepping out of your comfort zone and demonstrating that he indeed did that with his, and he could, of course, cover quite a few ideas. And that's what today's going to be about, is our little sessions are going to be covering a variety of thoughts and concepts, and they might sound and feel a little bit helter-skelter at times, but it's people who have a passion for giving back to the industry, who are sharing and talking about things that they feel that are important to them and to your success. And I told them that they had 10 minutes. So you're going to see that throughout today. Again, if you are just joining us, thank you for joining us. You can pop out to the mini sessions, djntv.com/mini sessions. And from there, you can go and check out the full schedule of who's going to be up. Jason Spencer's video is up next, and he just messaged me that, wow, my message really fits in really tightly with what Dave was just talking about. So, yeah, they're going to tie in. We've got one more in this block, and then we're going to be going to our second video block. So every hour, you're going to be changing YouTube video players. The biggest reason for that is I didn't want to have, you know, these 2 to 3 hour shows that would just basically become this all-consuming thing. So we've got our sponsor, our main sponsor for today, ElectroVoice. We'll be giving them a spot, and we'll be right back here. In our next session, we've got Jason Spencer. Some of you have watched the shows we've done together. Jason and I have talked about profit first and a lot of different things that'll help your business and improve your business. Jason's going to be up as our next session here with the DJN TV mini sessions.
Hi there, certified profit first professional coach Jason Spencer here, and you are invited to come to ProfitCon. It may very well be the first conference in the world dedicated to profitability. The first conference was actually held in 2015 because, to the best of our ability, nobody can find another conference like it. And at our first meetup, we just had bookkeepers and accountants and business coaches. They were all there learning ways to help their clients and themselves increase profitability. It has subsequently grown to include all types of entrepreneurs. We have accounting professionals, business experts. We actually have a sports team. Owner of a sports team was there this last year. All who are there to learn and share strategies on profitability. And at our most recent conference this past October, Erin Moger, we affectionately call her Mo. She works back in the Profit First HQ. She was delivering a presentation, and one of the attendees raised his hand and he said, you know, the standard Profit First accounts, the foundational five, they just don't work in my business. To the unique requirements of my organization. And Mo looked down from that stage and she goes, you know what? When in doubt, create an account. As if though it was really that simple. It is, by the way. For those of you that have ever seen me present Profit First, you know that we have what we call the foundational five accounts. These are the core accounts that Profit First is built on. It's the income account, the profit account, the owner's pay, tax, and operating expenses. These five accounts, these are the training wheel accounts of Profit First. But after about 6 months of implementation, it's time for those wheels to come off. And the truth is, Profit First has many advanced accounts that we can implement, from what's called a drip account, and that helps businesses that deal with spikes and ebbs and flows in their income, where you might have a whole lot of money coming in at one part of the year and no money coming in at the other part of the year. We have what's called the vault account. This is used as a rainy day fund for short-term emergencies. And for businesses that require supplies, we may use what's called a stocking account. There's a pass-through account, materials, subcontractors, commissions, employee payroll, sales tax, petty cash. The list goes on and on. But perhaps two of my favorite ones are called the big equipment account and the education fund account. And truthfully, these are the same kind of account, but the money is used for different purposes. These two accounts, they're savings accounts that I've set up in my business. The big equipment one is designed for, you guessed it, investing in new equipment like lighting or DJ controllers or laptop computers. The education fund account, well, that's where I save to attend conferences like Mobile Beat or Arm DJs. It's also where I allocate a portion of my income to invest in workshops like Bill Herman's Entertainment Experience or Ron Ruth's Audio Amazing Love Story Workshop. And you know what? It's easy as pie. How, you might ask? Well, anybody ever ask you how you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? Bill Herman's 3-day workshop is $2,200. And boy, just saying that out loud sounds like a lot of money. Forking over $2,200 today, it might not be in your wheelhouse. 22 bucks, you might say, I can't afford it, and you move on. But wait a second. Didn't I just say this is easy as pie to save for this? Didn't I say that? Let me show you how. Today is January 29th, and that means there are roughly 11 months before the workshop takes place in November. Now, the first thing we need to do is determine a rhythm. And by that, I mean, how often do we want to save for this workshop? You might be very tempted to save per event that you perform, but that's not really ideal because in part, your events may vary a little bit, right? You might do 40 events in a year. Other years, you might do 50, 60, 70, maybe 100 events in a year. Some of you may only do a handful of events, you know, 25 or 30 per year. When those events happen throughout the year, this could become a little confusing and cause some added work to make it happen. So while you could do it this way, it's not really ideal. Rather than trying to perform this task on each event that you do, let's pick a period of time. Could be once a month, could be twice a month, could be once a week. Personally, I do these kinds of savings twice a month. With 12 months in a year, that means that over 1 year, I'm going to do 24 transfers into these savings accounts. However, we already said that this is coming up in November, right? So now we're down to 11 months or 22 transfers. So you're sitting there thinking, okay, Jason, what's all this mean? Where's that pie you talked about? Well, if you take the cost of the workshop at $2,200 and you divide it by 22, then I know twice a month, which for simplicity's sake, we'll say is the 1st and the 15th of the month, I need to transfer $100 into my education fund savings account. Now, over time, that money's going to build, and each month, I'm stashing away $200 until November, when I need to spend it, and now I've accumulated $2,200. I use the same method to save for conferences, Mobile Beat, Arm DJs, Midwest DJs Live. All of these events, I have one full year to save for. And for many of them, there's a deal on the pass if you buy it at the show a year in advance. Based on history, I can tell you there's a good chance that I'll be able to buy my Mobile Beat pass for 2018 while I'm at Mobile Beat this year. It'll probably cost me about $150. Last March, when I came home, I knew that meant that I had 24 days on a calendar, remember, twice a month for 1 year, to save for this pass. Do you know how much I saved? $6.25 twice a month. And it'll be one full calendar year when I get there in March. How easy is that? And as I plan out my year, or truthfully the next 24 or even 36 months of time, I use this same formula to save for all the things that I want to invest in for myself personally and for my business. Do you need to purchase new equipment? The way technology changes these days, I often give a lifetime to my equipment now. My DJ controller, my performance laptop, my cables, they all get an active use lifetime. Generally, it's 2 or 3 years for a tech item. And that's where this kind of savings really can come into play. Think about it. If you had to go out today and buy a brand new DJ controller and a brand new laptop, that could set you back anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000, maybe even more depending on the brand and the model. And if you haven't saved for it, I might now need to decide between that controller or that education that I wanted to do in November. Both are several thousand dollars each. But now I know that the lifetime of my controller is 3 years, and I can plug it into the formula, and I can take that $1,800 top-of-the-line controller, and I can save for it over 36 months. I'm saving twice a month, so that's 72 allocations, and I'm moving $25 each time account. And every 3 years, I now have the money in there ready for me to make the upgrade, assuming that I actually even need to do so. And if I don't, well, guess what? That money still sits in there and waits until I do need it. And the really cool thing is that you can compile all of this information into a spreadsheet, and it will show you all the things that you're saving for, how much money is going where. And with a few fancy calculations, not too drastic, it can even show you how many more payments you have to go. The other cool thing is that these accounts help you control what's known as Parkinson's Law. And it's a concept that I've shared. Essentially, it states that the more of a resource that's available to us, the more that we will consume that resource. And I wrote about this last year, and I used the analogy of a music library. I said that for those of us that have been around long enough, I've been doing this 23 years, we remember lugging crates of vinyl around in cases of CDs that we've pared down into basically what's the top 40 hits. Remember, so we could carry as few things as possible with us, saving our backs. Well, then the digital age came. Storage changed everything. We had the ability to save several hundred songs onto one MP3 CD. Well, then came thumb drives and external hard drives and attached to hubs. And now it's seemingly infinite storage. I mean, you can go online today. You can buy a 16 gigabyte these huge terabyte hard drives, right? 16 terabytes. Your music library is no longer just the top hits, is it? Now you're ripping full albums. You're carrying remixes of songs after remixes of songs after remixes of songs, all to your heart's content. Several thousand hits became tens of thousands of songs and videos, many of which you will probably never even play in your entire career. Why? Because you have more space available at your disposal. You don't necessarily need those extra songs, but because the room exists, there's this unconscious behavior in our minds that says we have to consume all that available space and fill it up. Well, that unconscious desire to consume, it exists in your bank account too. Have you ever logged into your bank account and said, hey, my client paid me, I can go buy X, Y, and Z now? And you do, right? And then the next month you're scrambling to pay your bills or possibly even yourself. Well, by moving these small amounts into the education or the big equipment account, you're starting to safeguard your money. You're going to put that money in a place where you can't touch it until you need to. That way, when you open up the bank account and you take a look at it and you say, I got a little less money that I can go willy-nilly with. Meanwhile, it's piling up over in those other accounts. And twice a month, until it's accumulated to its maximum worth, and you can outright invest in the things that your business needs. So there you have it. Easy as pie savings, so that you can always get what you need. And remember, when in doubt, create an account. Take care and enjoy the rest of today's sessions.
So that was Jason Spencer coming to us and giving us a little idea on how to make some accounts and do some cool things with that. And gang, if you haven't had a chance, go check it out. Jason's in the chat room right now, and he can pop. I think he put a link up there. If not, we'll put the link up there. He's got some really great stuff. Go check our past videos. We've got some really cool things about talking about the accounts. Definitely going to help you change your business. We're going to keep going here. We've got Chris Hintz up next. He's going to be talking about music mixing. Now, there's two parts to this video. The one he's going to talk about, and you're going to see right now. And the second part is actually the music mix that he did. And it's the sister companion piece, what have you, to this video. If you're in the DJ NTV Insider area, which you can go to djntv.com/insider, there's links up there, and join that. That video plus about another 80 or so, maybe let's call it 60. 60 videos are up there right now that are an educational resource library. And I'm getting the point now that there's so much content in there. I have to start breaking it down. I'm going to be putting it into categories so it's easier. We'll have the music category, the business category, performance category. So that way the insiders can go and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to just spend some time today learning. I'm going to go in and learn about some music, the best of the 50s and such that you should have in your library. Anyway, that's going to be coming. So djntv.com. Go to the insider area, join that, and you're going to be able to see the next part of Chris's presentation. So without further ado, we'll be right back with Chris.
This is Chris with Pinnacle Productions here in Sioux Falls talking a little bit about how you can add a little excitement and energy by using nightclub style mixing and nightclub mixes into your weddings. This summer, I had a bride that I'd actually met at a nightclub I DJed at a couple years ago, and we did their wedding, and when they were discussing some of the things that they were really interested in, they didn't want the same kind of a DJ who just pushed play, song would end, new song would fade in or fade out. They really liked the energy that they were able to get when they were in the nightclub environment where one song just seamlessly blended with another. So that was a very important thing for them. And not every bride is going to be that way, but just like anything else that we use as DJs, lighting is a tool, our DJ consoles are tools, our microphones are tools, but the ability to mix music and appeal to different generations is also a very important tool that you can and should utilize, at least in my opinion. But this particular bride had wanted to have an open dance song called Shut Up and Dance. There's all of this talking that's going on during the formalities, everything leading up to the first dances. Some of us use shoe games. Other people have edits that we have the bride talking to their father. So there's all of these talking points that are going on during most receptions. So when we get to the dance part, they want it to be fun. So she wanted to basically say, okay, it's time to shut up, time to dance. So we played Walk the Moon's hit, of course, Shut Up and Dance. And then as you're going through their playlists, you see something that is very exciting. Dedication to her mom. Her mom's favorite song is Whitney Houston, I Wanna Dance With Somebody. So we know we're going to get that song in, and they're really, really close to Shut Up and Dance as far as BPMs. Whitney Houston's is 122, 123, and Walk the Moon's 126, 128, depending on the version that you're using. So we know we're going to put those songs together in some way, shape, or form, but being able to use wordplay, I took Shut Up and Dance and then went into the first verse and chorus and then out of Just Dance by Lady Gaga. And then I went into Dynamite by Teo Cruz where it goes, I came to dance, dance, dance. So you're using that dance to go through as wordplay from one song to the next to the next. And what you do is you're able to build up the dance floor right away. Shut Up and Dance was one of the most popular songs this past wedding season. And right away between 5 and 35 as far as their ages, we're dancing and having fun. And keeping the millennials and getting their attention right away is a really big thing for most people because our friends have plus ones who are on their phones looking for something else to do. So if we're able to play music right away that gets them involved, gets them excited, that is going to lend well for the energy and keeping these people around past, 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. So we played Shut Up and Dance. Again, our dance floor had a pretty good, probably 100 people on the dance, 410 maybe. Big weddings, 400 people over in Mitchell this last summer. And so we play Shut Up and Dance, and then we play Just Dance by Lady Gaga, and we get a few more of the, probably 35 to 40-year-olds dancing and having fun. And then we played Dynamite by Teo Cruz, which is also a really great song. And again, dance, dance, dance. And as you're fading that song from one song to the next, and then we get into the hook, right at the very beginning of Whitney Houston, where she goes, woo. Well, right away, the bride's mom, who the song was dedicated to, it's her favorite song, grabs her aunts, is like, oh my God. And she like grabs these girls. And then pretty soon we have this really fun dance floor that's literally 5 to about 60 years old. So we got the millennials involved right away. We got the parents involved right away. The dance floor never stopped moving because you constantly have this beat going in the background, blending these songs together. People don't know when one song ends and then the other begins until you get into the hook of the song, and then it keeps them there. So that is one way I think nightclub style mixing actually makes a lot of sense to use in weddings. Where I've seen it gone horribly wrong is where the DJ uses their personal taste and not what the taste of the couple is in music. So there are some EDM DJs that get hired, of course, to do people's weddings because they had so much fun at the club. And that's great. There's nothing wrong with that. But the first dance to about 10:30 or so, you're going to have to appeal to a lot more people than just your friends that want to go rage on a Saturday night at the local club. So for us, taking that music, learning how to blend that together, making sure that we cross generational gaps, that's a really, really big thing. And we'll go back to that wedding in Mitchell. Well, we get done playing Whitney Houston's I Want to Dance with Somebody, and then we go right back into something modern. We went into Bruno Mars' Uptown Funk. And after that song, we have an edit of that song where it goes jump on it, goes into Apache. So then we mixed in Apache, just the hook where it's jump on it, because like no one knows the chorus, or I'm sorry, no one knows the verses in that song, and they only know the chorus. So we played just the chorus, and then we dropped into the groom's family's favorite song, which was We Are Family. So we had the bride's family right away involved, we had the young people right away involved, we had the older people right away get involved, and then lastly we had, you know, the groom's family get involved too. So right away, young people, old people, bride's family, groom's family. Those are all really, really great things. And then when you go into slower songs coming out of those to build up the energy again, that's when you can, you know, put your sets together so that if you have an 80s set, like it's early on in the evening, there are great redrums, there are great remixes that stay true to the original artist's vision of the song, but allow you to create these seamless mixes to go from Living on a Prayer by Bon Jovi, into AC/DC, Shook Me All Night Long, into The Outfield, Your Love, into Love Shack, Jesse's Girl, Summer of 69. So the mixing style isn't just for the new songs. It also can be used for some of the other songs. Of course, the edits are going to be different, and that's something every DJ has to source their own edits from. We use a lot of different sources for our music, but being able to have those intros and outros that are dubbed, of course, DJ friendly, that allows us to use those songs to better mix not just the music, but to mix the types of music that people are going to request at a wedding. It all depends on the crowd, and it all depends on the type of music that they're looking for. But if you're able to take country and blend it into hip-hop, take hip-hop, blend it into rock, 80s, 70s, all of these things can be easily done. For instance, we have a couple of country sets where, and we don't always play it at weddings, but we have the redrum of Shake That from Eminem. It's actually the redrum that's put onto Country Girl Shake It For Me by Luke Bryan. And then if you play that track coming out of like a hip-hop set, you can blend in, and before the people that know it's not hip-hop anymore know it, there's a country song that's rocking on the dance floor. And the main thing that I think helps a lot with what we do at weddings is you take these songs that were milestone moments. So when people are in their late 20s, the songs that they were playing on the radio 15 years ago that were popular when they got their first car, those songs, they have special meaning. So if we're able to take those songs and blend those in as well, then pretty soon you remember driving down that gravel road when you're 16 in the new car feeling like a king. You remember the grass when, you know, they mow the grass right before you're getting ready to play in the state softball tournament or state baseball tournament for the gentlemen. So there's a lot of reasons why I think using these types of songs mixed together in the right way can add a lot to what we're trying to do at a wedding. Remember, a wedding is an emotional affair. It's not something where people come and just want to leave right away. And we've never met a bride or a groom that has said, we want to not have fun. but we've all been to weddings that are not fun. So our goal as DJs is to constantly push the envelope, trying to find different ways to get involvement, to get engagement, so that people stay. We invest, and our clients invest, so much time and so many other resources like money, taking days away to plan these big days, and they want their guests to have fun. So in my opinion, nightclub style mixing can help create a seamless, cohesive event that gets people from 5 to 55 dancing for the most of the night, and ultimately is something that your guests are going to wake up the next morning, their feet are going to hurt from dancing a little bit too much, maybe their head hurts from too much liquid courage. But the goal of a great DJ is to get people involved and use all the tools possible to make sure they have a great evening with them and their friends. Again, I'm Chris with Pinnacle Productions. This is why I think mixing music is one of the most important things you can do as a DJ at a wedding. Thanks, guys.
So that is our first hour of our shows today. We've got 10 more to go. Go to djntv.com/mini-sessions and all of the YouTube links are there. Go to show number 2. We'll be starting that in just about 5 minutes, gang. Thank you for watching. We'll see you in just a few minutes.